The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
Is up. What is up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. Very happy to be joined by my co-host, as I always am. Not always. About 20% of the time, I'm not happy to be joined by him. But 80% of the time, I'm okay with it. I'd say out of that 80%, 40% of the time, I'm real excited. And we're in the 40% today. So what's up, Rob? How are you, brother?
Hey, 40%, that's better than Biden polls. So, and that's in the very excited category.
That's way better. And enthusiastically supporting, that's way better than Biden. Yeah, you're crushing it. You should run for re-election as co-host of this podcast.
Glad
to see that you're off the road. You are back home in the black hole that you live in. And so
that's right.
Nice to see your shoulders are just disappearing into the background behind you.
I got a nice gang shirt on.
That is true. A nice Legion of Skank shirt on. Yeah. Fucking Skankfest is coming up, man. That's only a few months away. Looking forward to that. All right. Well, I hope everybody had a nice 4th of July. I hope you celebrated the good things about America and cursed all the bad things. Maybe with some family or something like that. So for today's show, the first thing I want to talk about, right, is the COVID regime, which of course has been the thing that we've talked about more than anything else over the last 2.5 years, but they're always giving us something to talk about. And I think it makes sense that we've talked about it more than anything else because it's like the most important thing that's happened in our lives as far as government policy goes, that's for sure. And it's just, you know, it's the most insane, draconian, you know, threat to civilization and freedom and all the shit that we care about. And I know, by the way, sometimes I'll say this, I've heard people give me pushback about this where, you know, they'll say things like, well, look, there are other really horrible policies that we have. So why do you put the COVID regime like right at the top?
The other ones didn't keep me in my house. You want to go bomb Iraq? I don't like it, but it doesn't make me stay home. It doesn't ruin my career.
Look, there is certainly an argument, right, that the war in Iraq is the example you just gave. You go, well, hey, that's worse. I mean, look, something like 1 million Iraqis died in that war. And I think, by the way, it's got to be more than that, because that figure, the million figure, was out like way before the war ended. So I don't even think people really exactly know how many people. Tens of millions were displaced and had to flee the country. I mean, it's it was horrific. So if you're an Iraqi, you know, I could really see making a strong argument like, hey, man, no, this was not as bad as that, you know? And truthfully speaking, look, if you're, there are all types of horrible policies. Look, if you use heroin or something like that, and you were thrown in a cage for being caught with it, or you sell heroin or whatever, you know, okay, a less sympathetic figure, but still, you know, someone like that, okay, it is to me, I really am at my core, I'm a bleeding heart libertarian. I believe in freedom. And I think the idea of, you know, like in the same way that we look at, you know, you can look at policies from a couple hundred years ago or something like that and be like, oh my God, that was so insanely horrible. How did human beings ever do that? How did people justify that? Like, how was there slavery? There was just slavery and people just accepted that this could happen to people, you know, and it's so easy to look at that in the past. But I do think, and as I've said for years and years on this show, and I've never stopped believing this, I do think that, look, the idea of like throwing a human being in a cage and keeping them there for like enslaving them, chaining them and throwing them in a cage. If you're talking about doing that for anything short of like a violent crime, that is like morally appalling, you know? So I still feel that way. And so, hey, if you're that person, I could understand you arguing, look, that was, you know, like if, or let's say even to make it a stronger example, let's say you were someone who was wrongly accused of that. You didn't even do it, you know, and you just got accused of it and you got 20 years in jail, which happens quite a lot in our country. People do a decade in jail and they were wrongfully, you know, they were innocent and they were, you know, the courts got it wrong. I mean, if you're that person, you were the victim of totalitarianism of the worst kind. Like you might be like, I would have been better off in North Korea than I was here. You know, they have these SWAT raids where they just get the wrong address and go fucking just SWAT raid somebody. And the fucking, you know, like one of them gets killed during the SWAT raid. This happens.
Temple every other weekend.
Yeah, luckily. Luckily, they
and how do they not figure out by now that there isn't a hostage situation at his house?
You'd think, like, at least the police department would be like, you know, fool me once, shame on you, kind of attitude. Like, make me SWAT Tim Pool 7 times, shame on you. 8 times, shame on me. Yeah, that's really, but it's not, you know, we joke around about it, but it's very serious. And I know, you know, Tim and all those guys and Lydia and all of them, and like, it's a very scary thing when people you know and care about are like, you know, multiple times being swatted. So I'm not saying like there are tons of policies that you could look at where for that person, they did genuinely suffer under the worst type of totalitarian, you know, system, you know, for them, it's the worst thing in the world. But there's something different about the COVID regime. It was different in scale. It was different in kind. It was a different thing to, you know, there are things that I believe shouldn't be criminalized that are criminalized. You know, I don't think anything that is voluntary should be criminalized. I don't think that, you know, even things that I really don't like, you know, so heroin use or selling heroin or prostitution or whatever the things you want to, you know, think like you could have a moral judgment about it. But if it's voluntary, I don't believe it should be criminalized. We do believe that aggressive acts of violence or property crime should be criminalized. But there is something profoundly different about criminalizing going to work than criminalizing heroin. It's just different. It's not just different in the sense that it's not just that there's a moral difference. There's a difference in terms of norms, in terms of like what people expect out of their life. Like these were people who were following the law, who weren't people who are, it's not just like you're making something illegal that is an undesirable thing that most of society doesn't want you to do. This was a very desirable thing that very good people that, you know, and law abiding people, you know, or people who are trying to follow the rules were doing. This was, and it was on such a massive level. Like everyone was affected by it. And it was the biggest propaganda campaign that we've ever seen. It was the biggest, like, there was never anything. Like, you know, people, libertarians, a lot of times talk about like the ratchet effect or like this kind of like, you know, the boiling frog, you know, things get a little bit hotter, a little bit hotter. But this was one drastic, like changing all of the norms of how a society works, things that no one would have ever put up with, just all coming down. And it had so many different levels to it. It wasn't just the lockdowns, you know, it wasn't just the mandates. It wasn't just the pushing of the vaccine. It was also because all, you know, this is the way our government works, that while all of this was happening, it was the perfect time to get in. Also, we're going to throw in like the biggest corporate bailouts and bank bailouts and destroy the currency and blow up federal spending to like even from like Obama and Trump, unprecedented levels, or Trump previously to 2020, unprecedented levels of what you could think the government could do. So it was like all of these things at once, just the craziest thing that's ever happened to our country. And so this, now we're at a point where at least for the moment, it seems that a lot of the wind is out of the sails of the proponents of the COVID regime. Many of their heroes have fallen. You think of Governor Cuomo, you know, who was, you know, they were all celebrating as the greatest thing ever. He's now a disgraced former governor. Fauci has become more and more of a laughing stock than this person people look up to. Things have definitely changed. And right now, in almost every place, the policies are not as draconian as they once were, you know. You don't see lockdowns. You don't see, you know, capacity restrictions at events. The COVID passports basically failed for now. There still are some mandates out there. But, you know, even in some places, you know, the mask wearing is definitely down, you know, no matter where you are. Some places it's still, you know, obnoxiously high, but anyway, that's basically more or less where we're at right now. But the question still kind of lingers, what's next? You know, what's next in this COVID regime? They certainly have not given up on it. They have not, they're still pushing, you know, like as we mentioned a couple weeks ago, they just came out and said that the, you know, the FDA approved and then the CDC recommended vaccines for 6-month-olds based on nothing, based on no science. I mean, even they'll admit there are no clinical trials that demonstrate that there's a reduction in hospitalization or severe illness for 6-month-olds. There's not, but they're still kind of pushing this. And there's still push to get your next booster and things like this. You still see this all up. So it's, we'd be stupid to not at least entertain the question of like, okay, do we have to be concerned about more, you know, at worst case lockdowns, or right after that, more passports, mandates, all of this stuff?
And I'd like to talk a little bit more about why this one was worse. Like saying, people, ahead. I guess, give a shit. Well, one is, it certainly is harder to care about the things you have to conceptually care about. Patrice O'Neill had a great joke about that, when like there's a tsunami on the other side of the world. It's like, yeah, you care, but if you're being honest about it, you don't care as much as like when Hurricane Sandy happens. And there's some truth to that. But government's power, it's a little bit like the Freddy Krueger effect. It's like the extent that you're willing to believe and accept their power. That's the power that they have. And so the way that government expanded, like, this affects all... This affects all criminality, because now we're like expanding government's authority above us and the conditions by which someone could be considered a criminal. And to go in the, this didn't come to be, but the worst case scenario here would have been health passports that, you know, they knew that they turned on the live tracking. I hate to break it, you know, that they know exactly where we are at all times. Proof of which is that Google said that they would delete if you went to an abortion clinic. So in other words, they basically admitted the fact that other crucial places if you're going to, they do keep that track record and they would be willing to hand it over to government. But for certain specific things, this was last week, that was a headline, they're willing to delete that. So the point being that if the COVID thing had been more regularly accepted than it was, you would have a health passport. We would be linked to like pieces of technology tracking us at all time. What happened was bad. There was a worse version of it that we didn't get to, but still like the extent by which we let government expand its authority in the face of what was not a risk, right? Healthy individuals were not at risk. They shut down the economy. We haven't seen the cost of all that. We're first starting to see that kind of play out in supply lines.
We're just starting to. Yeah.
Right. So for anyone who kind of thinks that this wasn't the biggest threat, I think it's the biggest expansion we've seen, and the unintended consequences of government expanding. And even just from an economic perspective of just shutting down critical industries in the face of a non-emergency, like there are costs to that. And if we do more and more of that, you know, what are we, I don't know that we're all going to starve to death, but we don't want to be living under full socialism. Yeah.
No, I mean, look, you make a great point, make several great points there. And the thing about, you know, shutting down the economy and how, and I know, look, if people really want to like nitpick, they can go, well, we didn't shut down the entire economy, but you know, you
if
get
you're
the point,
if you're a protected class, you weren't. If you were Amazon, yes, you weren't. If you're an airline industry, you weren't.
No, so right. So basically, we didn't shut down giant corporations and what were deemed, and in many cases were, essential workers. Although some of them were really interesting, you know, who they chose and who they didn't choose with the essential workers. I mean, some of them were like, you know, what was it? Liquor stores could stay open, but churches could close. Now, that to me seems like a bit of a value judgment. You know, like, I don't know if that is, if there's really something objective to say that, like, it's more important that people can drink than go to church. You could certainly, if you're a religious person, argue that that's like insane and the most like, you know, like a demonstration of the most backward kind of principles or something. But some of the people who were deemed essential were literally, they were just saying like, well, society will collapse if we don't have these services available. Huge swaths of the economy were shut down. Huge amount. Like, that is a huge deal. And if there's one thing that I think that libertarians should get, at least we should have an insight that others maybe don't about this. This is where the great Ludwig von Mises, I believe his book is behind me here. No, maybe actually I don't have it up on the shelf, but the greatest economist who ever lived, who's kind of like the godfather to the, you know, to libertarianism, is Ludwig von Mises. And his great economic treatise was called Human Action. And that is kind of like one of the most foundational like libertarian insights, that that's really what economics is. Economics is human action. And it's very easy for a lot of people today, they compartmentalize these things. So they think of, you know, economics is like, well, that's like money, you know? So, and people go like, well, over here in one area, we're talking about like human beings. And in another area, we're talking about making money and stuff. It's a very, very first world privileged way to look at things. Like, no one's ever going to make this, like, have trouble or make this false distinction in like a third world country. The idea that, like, you know, because to them, money is like having enough to eat today. So it's not like, oh, that's just making money. This is like what really matters to human beings. But you'll see this from modern day leftists a lot. Oh, why are you, you know, if you'd be upset about the riots in 2020, they'd say things like, you know, oh, so you care more about property than human beings. You know, you see stuff like that a lot, even though, of course, human beings were killed in those riots and assaulted and all types of stuff. But even leaving that aside, you know, but to people who actually like think about this thoughtfully at all, you go like, yeah, but that property damages a human being too. Like, I mean, in the sense, what I mean by that is that it's like, well, I don't know, someone put like 10 years of their life into that business. You destroy that business. That's not like no human was affected. Oh, it's just a brick wall. You know, I mean, it's like, no, that was somebody's whole world. That was everything, their hopes and dreams and aspirations. And I hope that at least now with, you know, inflation just destroying so many people's lives, that you'd go, yeah, it's not just like, it's not as if inflation, oh, okay, so let's say like now you can't get the house that you want and you can't afford to fill your car up at the pump and you can't afford to, you know, you're cutting back on all of these things and like life is not going to be what you thought this is. This is not just, it's not like over here, aside from social issues over here. It's not like there's human issues over here and this is just some other issue over here. No, this is the stuff that like destroys marriages and breaks up families and leads to suicides and leads to like dreams being destroyed and people not reaching their full potential. And you know what I mean? Like it's not, there's no distinction there. It's all one and the same. And so, yeah, like shutting down the economy is like huge. This is like the biggest thing we've ever seen happen. So just to like back up your point that it's like, no, that in itself should make this like, should make this the biggest thing that we've ever lived through. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Grove Collaborative. Grove carries hundreds of products aimed at replacing single-use plastics across your home and personal care routine. And by 2025, Grove will be 100% plastic-free. Like Grove Co.'s concentrated cleaners and refillable glass bottles, they're friendlier to the planet and twice as effective as the leading natural brands. Switch to sustainable products for every room in your home, from laundry care to hand soap and more. Grove Co. has you covered with safe formulas and refillable packaging that never compromise on performance. I'll tell you, I think this company is very cool. As somebody who's got two young kids in the house, I am more concerned than ever about having products that are not toxic, that are not going to put any bad things in the air. I don't care so much about saving the earth, but I care very much about protecting my family. So, go to grove.com/POTP today. Get a free gift set worth up to $50 with your first order. Plus, shipping is fast and free. Get started right now at grove.com/POTP. That's grove.com, grove.com/POTP. All right, let's get back into the show. But anyway, to, you know, because I completely agree with you. I think that was very good. Several very good points there. But also back to what I was saying, that it's like we should be concerned about what the next step is. And it's not as if like you don't want to start like celebrating like we've won already. You don't know. We don't know where this is going. And I think we while I don't think there's going to be more lockdowns in America, I don't know that that's the case. And we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening. So there has been a bit of an attempt by Fauci and the Fauciites of the world to start kind of ringing the alarm bells again. Oh, we have to be very concerned. There's these new subvariants that are tearing through parts of the country. And so, I think that a lot of these people have been largely discredited. A lot of people are feeling the pain. There was a recent poll out that demonstrated that a lot of people are not buying Joe Biden's kind of line that like, oh, all the pain you're suffering right now is because of Vladimir Putin or something like that. It seems to me, my guess is that it's going to be a really tough sell when Americans are feeling all this pain in 2022 to not go, I think this has something to do with 2020. You know what I mean? I think this has something to do with 2021. You know, the two craziest years we've ever been through ever. And all of a sudden now this year, everything's a mess. I think there might be some relation to shutting down the economy. And now there being supply chain issues and inflation issues and all of this stuff. So that's kind of how I feel. I think it'll be tough to get away with that. But after seeing what these guys did get away with, and how quickly they got away with it, which was one of course, and I'm far from, I know I've said this before, but this is far from an original point. But the fact that it all happened so quickly, that within like a couple weeks of propaganda, they were able to convince the American people that like, yeah, we got a fucking 15 days to flatten the curve. And then able to convince them, oh no, actually that's going to be months and months to flatten the curve. And then all of a sudden it wasn't about flattening the curve. It was just about no new cases and all of this stuff. Those people who were able to do that, we should not underestimate them or what they might attempt to try to do again.
Yeah, and all I mean, the fact that they're pushing this to kids with no scientific basis or evidence whatsoever shows that they're being a little bit not relentless about this.
Yeah, yeah.
That's and I saw there was an article today in Canada that they're changing it. There's no longer fully vaccinated. I think it's up to date, which is basically every 9 months. Or there's a new term that they're switching to.
I think it was in Australia where I saw that, where they said everything we've said about being fully vaccinated, throw that out. Now we mean three or four doses. And we might need to update this every 9 months or something like that. You're like, oh, okay, interesting. So that's
like, sorry, you were too confident that you knew how to deal with this and that you were 100% right. That you at least got to fire people and bring out a roll out a new staff and tell me that they know how to handle this. And so who's believing these old chumps? Like, yeah. I don't know. How dumb can you be that Fauci could come out and go, I've been wrong about everything thus far, but as long as you follow this suggestion from me, who's listening?
Yep. Yep. And look, we've said this pretty early on in the vaccine. When the vaccine regime rose up, which there is should be a little bit of a separation between like the initial COVID lockdown mandate regime and then the vaccine regime that followed it, that we go, well, look, the obvious like logical conclusion of this is, yes, you're going to have to get boosted every year, maybe twice a year forever in perpetuity, that this is going to be the standard.
Uterus never works again.
Yeah, there you go. It's interesting to watch this kind of unfold. And I will say that one of the things that I find interesting, and I don't exactly know where all of this is going to go. And I also don't think it's predetermined. You know, I think I wouldn't do this if I thought it was predetermined where this was all going to go. But I think that it's interesting that they're still trying to push this while they are losing so much popular support. And while as their figures are collapsing and so much of the narrative is just collapsing, you know, and that is, I think some people very mistakenly underappreciate how important that is. This is why propaganda persists. And I think this is why undermining the propaganda is very important. This is why the powers that be are so upset with people like Joe Rogan. You're like, wait, what the fuck? You're telling me you got 20 million people listening to Dr. Malone? No, you're not allowed to do that. We must throw everything at you to try to ruin you. Like, this is why they're very threatened by those people, because it's important for them to propagandize people. And the inverse of that is that it's important to wake people up from the propaganda. So, you know, the way you propagandize people effectively is to have a plausible narrative that everyone who is perceived as a legitimate authority is parroting. That's how effective propaganda works. And look, if you start with it, the very, very beginning of the COVID propaganda was plausible. You go, look, there's this novel virus. We do not know what the death rate is. Exactly. People, epidemiologists and virologists were correctly projecting that this thing was going to spread like to people by the billions around the world. A lot of people were going to get this virus and they didn't know exactly what the death rate was. And if the death rate was one or two percentages higher than it was, holy shit, that would be a very different thing than what we had. And so at the very beginning to say, look, we need everyone to isolate so we flatten the curve, so we don't overwhelm the hospitals and people aren't dying in stairwells and on the street corner because we don't have enough hospital beds. That at least was plausible. You know what I mean? That it's like, oh, shit. Okay. It requires this big sacrifice. It's just a couple of weeks just to make sure that this unbelievable worst case scenario doesn't happen. All right. You know? But man, has the propaganda it's like almost like month by month by month just gotten so much less plausible. And so that's an interesting dynamic that they're trying to push this, but the propaganda is just not effective in the same way. that it was at the beginning. So it's interesting to see both of these things. Anyway, what I wanted to go through today was an article in the Los Angeles Times. This article came out earlier today, and it's on this kind of topic of where the people who are pushing this COVID propaganda and pushing the kind of alarmism that we've been dealing with for 2.5 years now, where they are and what they have. And you can kind of, you know, judge as we discuss it, how plausible this is, how effective you think this is going to be. So let's get into it. This was an article earlier today, written in the LA Times. It's actually not that much earlier today. I think I just saw they were pushing it a couple hours ago. It's online, but this might be even for tomorrow's paper. It came out in the afternoon. So the title reads, "Super Contagious, Able to Reinfect. California faces big coronavirus risk from BA4 and BA5. That is the title. Now, those are the names of the of two of the subvariants of the Omicron variant. So if you're losing track here, there's the Omicron variant, and then there are these subvariants, which are basically, you know, derivative of the Omicron variant, but a little bit different. I guess not quite enough to consider them their own variant. I don't know, Rob. I'm not a virologist.
Yeah, I don't know how that works either.
Yeah, exactly. How different you have to be before you get to be your own variant. Maybe BA5 maybe really felt like they were their own variant. They were like, I thought we're different enough, but no, sorry. You're still Omicron. Okay. So reading from the article, are people in your life being infected with the coronavirus even after being caught up in an earlier wave? You aren't alone. For the third straight year, the arrival of summer has brought fresh uncertainties about COVID-19 outlook in California. The latest development upending the pandemic landscape is the growing dominance of two subvariants, BA5 and to a lesser extent, BA4. That not only are ultra contagious, but have shown the ability to reinfect those who contracted earlier Omicron strains. This kind of sure, go ahead.
I just like to point out. I just like to point out that the most important variable here is it extremely deadly, and if not, telling me that something is more contagious or new is literally irrelevant information. So if you're going to fearmonger and just go, oh no, there was the 4 and now the 4 became the 5 and even more people, like if more people are getting colds, but it's a cold that lasts for a half a day and you just sneeze once, does anyone give a shit? Like, yeah, so you know, I'm just saying, this is what's misleading about this is like, lead with the one piece of important information is, did this become more deadly? Is there more hospitalizations? Who's being affected? Is it people that have been vaccinated? Are they at risk? The same as like who specific, you know, it's like fucking simple journalism, the who, what, where, and why, but they just kind of go instead of that. It's just the propaganda fear, fear.
It's one of the greatest Michael Malice quotes ever. And he's got several good ones, but when he said the corporate press is factual, but not truthful. And that's often the case. I mean, there are times where they are not factual, but there's something really like that's the essence of it right there. Being factual, but not truthful. So they're saying something that is not factually incorrect, but it's not giving you the correct understanding of what's going on. It's not conveying to you the reality of the situation.
And I'll give you like just a good little insight. If people have good information, they'll give it to you. And so in this case, if their agenda is selling you on the fear of corona, so if they had better information to scare you with, that's what they would tell you. So if there were stacks of corpses at hospitals, the leading line would be, oh my God, there are now stacks of corpses at
hospitals.
The fact that they're not reporting that is because that's not the case. So they're going with the only information that they do have, which is new and higher infections, but that's maybe irrelevant.
Well, that's right. And so look, if in the same sense, if like to bridge those two together, the factual but not truthful, and your point that if there was more of a case, they would be giving it to you. It's like, look, if you leave out context, this is the essence of why when you testify in court, they ask you, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So it's the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So everything and no lies. And the reason why the whole truth is such an important like little sentence in there is that lies by omission are just as damaging as flat out lies. In the same sense that I could just, if you said, hey, Rob was in an altercation last night, what happened? And I go, you know, he shot a guy and killed him. That's what happened. But I omit the fact that a guy rolled up on you with a gun and shot at you five times and missed, and then you shot him. It's like, wow, well, that's that lie by omission is just as bad as a lie. It's like you created, again, that's factual, but not truthful, because I told you something that factually did happen, but I leave you with a perception completely different from what the reality of the situation is. So to attempt to be truthful and not merely factual, the truth is that viruses that are more contagious tend to be less deadly. That's the tendency. It's not 100% true, but that they tend to be less deadly. And this is why this is the evolutionary pressure that's on viruses. So as you know, you've heard before, and we've said before on the show, but kind of the ultimate virus in a sense, or viruses, is the common cold. Because it makes you just sick enough to be coughing and sneezing all over the place, but not so sick that you stay home in bed all day. So you get up and go around and you spread it all around to people. So the virus lives. And, you know, this is how evolution, you know, like works more or less, which, you know, whether you believe in it on like a macro scale, on a micro scale, the way it works is that it's not as if the virus has some like, you know, brain that's like, I want to be more contagious. It's just that the more contagious you are, you're more likely to live. And the less contagious you are, the more likely you are to die. Now, I know, give me shit, viruses aren't really alive, but close enough to what I'm saying, you know? And so if a virus makes you so incredibly sick that you're immediately on your deathbed, then you're not going to spread it as much. But if it makes you a little bit less sick where you can still go out, you're going to interact with more people and spread it. So the hope has always been from the beginning of COVID that this thing is basically going to become a thing that's more contagious and less deadly. So when they just start off by going, it's super contagious, and don't mention the other part of it, or at least not yet, that is the typical Michael Malice playbook that he, you know, ascribed to the corporate press, being factual but not truthful. All right, guys, let's take a second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Fume. Fume is an unbelievable product and a great sponsor of the network. I'm sure you've heard me talk about them before. If you're looking to quit smoking cigarettes or quit vaping, you've got to check out Fume. Fume is a natural inhaler designed for a better, safer, and natural way to quit smoking cigarettes. It's a no-smoke, no-vape, no-nicotine replacement for the hand-to-mouth habit of smoking. Fume is made of 100% Canadian maple and uses cores infused with plant oils studied to curb cravings. So you're not smoking nicotine, you're not smoking any chemicals, you're not inhaling any of that stuff. You're just inhaling the benefits of super plants. And I'll tell you, as somebody who's struggled with smoking and vaping for years, gum never worked for me. Patches never worked for me. The thing that replacing the hand to mouth action, that's the most important thing. And so now I got to tell you, you got to try Fume. It really does the trick. Fume was launched in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, in an effort to build a world of positive habits, and has since helped over 50,000 customers around the world. They're on a mission to help 1 million people quit smoking by 2025. Not only does Fume help with the quitting process, they also have support beyond quitting with over a dozen cores for relaxation, energy, and more. Quitting is tough, but Fume can really help. They've got thousands of five-star reviews from smokers who say they've tried everything else, and this is what worked for them. So please go check it out. Whether you're a smoker or an ex-smoker who still struggles with cravings, Fume is the perfect tool for you. It's time to create positive habits and quit naturally with Fume, and we're here to make it even easier. Right now, if you head over to breathefume.com/problem and use the promo code problem, you're going to save 10% off your entire order. Not to mention what you're going to save off not buying cigarettes or vape pods anymore. Just go to breathefume.com/problem. Of course, Fume is pronounced fume, but it's spelled F-U-M. So that's breathefume.com/problem. Use the promo code problem. That'll get you 10% off your entire order. All right, let's get back into the show. Okay, so let's keep reading. This combination of initial and recurring infectivity carries enormous implications. Here's what we know. How common are BA4 and BA5? According to the latest figures from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, BA5 compromised an estimated 53.6% of new cases nationwide for the weekend-long period that ended Saturday. This completes a stunning rise to dominance for the subvariant, which only a month ago was thought to be responsible for a bit less than 10% of new cases. Over the week ending Saturday, BA4 accounted for an estimated 16.5% of new cases, making it the third most common Omicron strain in circulation behind BA5 and BA2.12.1. The estimated viral proportions are similar in the southwestern U.S., which includes California, Arizona, Nevada, Hawaii, and the U.S. Pacific territories. What are the concerns with BA4 and BA5? Both subvariants are highly contagious. There you go again. The worry is that the trait, combined with their apparent reinfection prowess, could prolong or exacerbate California's already months-old coronavirus wave. Of particular concern is BA5. Dr. Eric Topol, director of the Scripps Research Translation Institute in La Jolla, recently called it the worst version of the virus that we've seen.
Ooh, spicy.
Okay. It takes immune escape, already extensive, to the next level. And as a function of that enhanced transmissibility, well beyond Omicron, the original BA1, and other Omicron family variants that we've seen, he wrote in a blog post. So.
But if you're boosted, again, you got antibodies, so this shouldn't be a problem.
That's right, Rob. Why are we even talking about this? So. He calls it the worst version of the virus we've seen. And the following quote is that he says, enhanced transmissibility, you know, because it's more contagious. Like that's why. And because it takes immune escape to an even more extensive level. And what they mean by that is that your immunity is not going to protect you from it as well. So even if you've had the virus already or you're vaccinated, okay. Now that's an interesting topic to get into, but they address that later. But he is going to call this the worst version of the virus we've ever seen. Now, to your point, if you're going to call to most honest, rational human beings, if you're going to call something the worst version of the virus we've seen, what would you think immediately that means? More people are going to die from it. More people are going to be hospitalized from it. More people are going to be severely ill from it. Not that, you know, it takes immune escape to the next level. So like, look, I've, you know, lots of people I know, myself included, have had COVID twice, right? But the fact that you got it a second time doesn't, that wouldn't be what makes you say, this is the worst version of the virus. What would make you think this is the worst version of the virus is if you were like, whoa, I'm seriously sick from it, right? So again, factual, but not truthful. And then even in this statement, you know, not even factual, the worst version of the virus. What are we judging that on? Okay, to the next paragraph. Omicron has spawned a number of subvariants since emerging late last fall, and those have largely been characterized by ramped up infectivity. Another way of saying it's more contagious. And to the point we were making before, as this tends to be the case with viruses, that the more contagious they are, the less deadly. In other words, try to look at it like this. If there were, and it's not as black and white as this, but if it was a case, if you were arguing between something being more contagious or something being more deadly, what would you rather see? Would you rather see a whole lot of people getting, you know, the common cold? Or would you rather see a smaller number of people getting Ebola? Right? Ebola is scarier because it's like at a much higher death rate. So again, now this can, depending on the scale, this can change. But to just pretend if you have this, what was for a while called a pandemic, that we're real, it's really awful to see something more contagious. Like, no, that is just not accurate. It's not accurate. And in fact, it's very likely that with COVID, the best case scenario is it being more contagious. The best case scenario is that it's like very contagious and really not deadly at all, right? That might be the best case scenario. So if you're just writing about it and saying that it's the, you know, oh my God, this is so bad because it's so contagious. It's like, this is not, you know, this is not an accurate.
If it was, what you really want is really contagious, not deadly, and people aren't vaccinated so that they actually build robust natural immunity.
Yeah. There's
go back in time. We might be done with this completely.
Well, there's a lot of epidemiologists who have made that argument, and a lot of them have lost their Twitter accounts for it. So I don't know. Okay. Where I say Omicron has spawned a number of subvariants. Where was I exactly? Enough alteration in the spike protein that immunity from either prior vax or prior Omicron infection, including recent infection, doesn't offer much protection, according to Dr. Robert Wacher, chair of the U.S. San Francisco Department of Medicine. Now, let's just pause right there for a second. So a lot of what you might be wondering when there are articles like this written in big newspapers like the LA Times, as we talked about earlier with the COVID regime and all the craziness that we've seen over the last 2.5 years, is when they're pumping out this type of like propaganda in corporate press outlets, you go, so what are you saying we should do? Because all of the previous, you know, propaganda was like, well, we should lock down, or we should have mask mandates, or we should have vaccine mandates, or we should have vaccine passports, or any of this stuff. So it's like, what exactly are you saying we should do? Is a fair question to ask when people are being propagandized in this manner. And it's interesting the way they put this. Now, another little piece of information, keeping that question in mind, what are you saying we should do? Also, what they've said we should do in the past. And also keeping in mind that it is basically, and I mean this in the truest sense of the term, settled science that natural immunity is stronger than the vaccine immunity. Meaning you have better immunity from the virus if you get the virus than you do from just getting the jab. Okay? Now let me read this again. Dr. Robert Wacher says, BA5 is a different beast with new superpowers. Enough alteration in the spike protein that immunity from either prior vax or prior Omicron infection doesn't offer much protection.
You know what I hear? That the government policy up until this point has been wrong because the vaccine doesn't offer much protection. So, you know what? Let's listen to other people now.
To your point that you kind of mentioned earlier, where you're like, oh, okay, but if you were doing real reporting here, tell me, is it more deadly? You know, like, tell me right now, am I more likely to, like, you know, be severely affected? As you mentioned earlier, look, from the very beginning, from the original Alpha COVID variant, there was a very, very small risk for, let's say, non-obese, young, healthy people. Okay. A very tiny, like risk of severe, you know, illness, hospitalization, or death. And this is way less than that. So tell me, when you say someone who was, okay, this is more likely to reinfect you, even if you've had natural immunity. Okay. But of those reaffected people, how likely are they to be, you know, hospitalized for this? How likely are they to die from this? That would be a very relevant piece of information. But the more interesting thing is that they're kind of admitting something here. Or they go like, oh, yeah, all of the studies have demonstrated that natural immunity is stronger than the vax. So even when they admit that the vaccine isn't working, which they've been pushing more than anything they've ever pushed in the history of my fucking life, even when they admit that, they go, well, the vax or natural immunity doesn't work very well against this. So it's to still scare you about the next fucking variant, but without admitting what the obvious truth there is. It's like, yeah, the vaccine doesn't work for this. That's right. Now, if you just say it that way, there's a whole different conclusion that one might come to than just going like, you have to be so scared of this fucking
new variant. Next storyline will be, we're so lucky that scientists actually figured out the variant-specific vaccines, which, by the way, that will be bullshit because it was obvious from the beginning. And when I say obvious, it means, I mean, if I was able to figure this out from random people that hit me up that listen to my show, then it's fucking obvious. And they were saying that this is a single protein spike and Big Pharma knows that this is not going to work for variants. That was conspiracy talk at first. Then they finally admitted to it when they said, we're going to start making the variant specific vaccines. However, if you just looked at the logistics of it, you're like, well, best case scenario is it's 120 days till rollout. Cause if it's taking you 90 days to develop, so then is that even going to be the variant? And so then, but they said, oh, we're going to be able to do it. And then they didn't do it, right? We now have variants that the vaccine doesn't work for, and they didn't make good on rolling out the variant-specific vaccine. So now they're claiming, oh, but we're going to be able to do it. And now the science is so good that we were able to get it done. So you got to get back out there and get the newest booster shot because we finally figured out the science here. And guess what? By the time that's the science, the virus will have mutated. They can't even come up with a coherent lie. And the fact that imbeciles are still listening to them and considering vaccinating their kids really just showcases how dumb the rest of humanity is. And I take pity on their souls, Dave.
Well, look, I mean, I feel like I've said many times on the show before, I think that the vast majority of people do not think about these topics in the way that we think about them. And I try my best. I'm not judging them for that, because there's a million topics that we don't think about that they know about. You know, there's so many things in our lives every day. There's, you know, if, like, as I've said, this is one of my favorite things that I've repeated many times. I go, if everyone was as obsessed with politics and philosophy as I am, we would all starve to death. You know? I don't know how the hell to grow food, and I don't know how to fucking build trucks. I don't know how, you know what I mean? Like, all the things that need to be done for us to eat, I know nothing about that. And there's other people who know a ton about that who don't know anything about political philosophy. And so there is something about the division of labor and specialization that's like, no, it, not everyone knows this stuff. And everyone, in the same way that like I, if I have a bug problem, an exterminator comes and tells me what we need to do, and I just go, yeah, you're the expert on that.
Yeah, but and if I have a problem, a leak, and the expert came over and he didn't fucking fix it. And then he said, well, I'll fix it this time. He still had roaches. And then he got roaches again. He goes, I'm going to fix it. And then you call that same fucking guy, then you're retarded. And I'll call you out for being retarded.
All right, fair enough. You go, I have a big roach problem. He goes, I'll fix that. And then I call him back. I go, I have a bear problem now. Go, yeah. She goes, oh, don't worry, I'll fix that. And I go, there's a lot of lions in my house. Could you do something about that? Okay, fair enough. But, you know, so anyway, but the thing that's like the my broader point is that this is where the plausibility of the narrative of the propaganda is at right now. All right, guys, let's take a minute and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Yo Delta. This is for responsible adults who are over the age of 21 living in states where Delta 8 is legal. If you're interested in Delta 8, you got to go over to yodelta.com where you can stock up on high quality lab tested Delta 8. As I'm sure many of you guys know, Yo Delta is also partners with Yo Kratom. These are like the best sponsors of our podcast, of Legion of Skanks, of Skankfest, of the entire Gas Digital Network. So please, if you can, go support these guys because they support everything we're doing. If you're over the age of 21, living in the majority of states where this is legal, go to yodelta.com and stock up on Delta 8 THC. It's kind of like CBD that it's found naturally in hemp and marijuana, but unlike CBD, Delta 8 does get you high. So keep that in mind. It's found in hemp. It can legally be shipped to various states. And again, this does get you high. So if, you know, you're in a state where pot's not legal, but Delta 8 is legal, maybe this is something you want to go check out. One more time, yodelta.com, the official Delta 8 sponsor of the Gas Digital Network. If you use the promo code GAS, you will save 25% off. One more time, that's yodelta.com, promo code GAS to save 25% off. Yo Delta, home of the Delta 8, the official Delta 8 sponsor of the Gas Digital Network. All right, let's get back into the show. So, okay, let's keep reading because we're almost done with this this article, I think. Okay. Among the biggest repercussions of BA5, he added, this is that same doctor. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I skipped ahead a paragraph there. Here. This is Dr. Robert Watcher. As BA5 becomes the dominant U.S. variant, its behavior will determine our fate for the next few months until it either burns itself out by infection so many people or is replaced by a variant that's even better at infecting people.
Dun, dun, dun.
Neither is a joyful scenario. So again, you just see what they're talking about. All we're talking about is how contagious it is, but not about how deadly it is. Haven't mentioned how deadly it is. They're just trying to push you in this direction of like, look, either it's going to fucking just be the complete dominant variant, or it's going to be like something even better at infecting people will come along. And this is the night he's saying it like this is the nightmare scenario that this virus becomes more and more contagious. But that's just not true. And any decent virologist should be able to tell you that it's just not true that the nightmare scenario is that it becomes more and more contagious. The nightmare scenario is that it becomes more and more deadly. That's what we'd be concerned about. That's the issue here. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I like this guy. He goes, hey, listen, we don't have any evidence to say that it's currently that bad, but it could get worse. So let's panic now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just say, well, save your panic. You know, you get all exhausted. You burn out all your panic before you were supposed to panic. Something bad happens. And then you're like, yeah, I blew my panic already.
Now, this is interesting here. Another thing he says here. Okay. Among the biggest repercussions of BA5, he added, is that prior infection, including an Omicron infection as recent as last month, no longer provides robust protection from reinfection.
If you took Pepaxil, whatever Fauci's right. on, then sure.
Yeah, but again, it's interesting. That's what he wants to add. Yeah, Fauci might get that rebound. But that's what he wants to add. That look, even prior infection, see how they try to downplay natural immunity. Prior infection, including an Omicron, even last month, if you had Omicron, you're still at risk of this new variant if you didn't have this variant. Okay. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, because, you know, there's just been so much bullshit over the last few years. But even if that's true, you go, okay, compared to what? Compared to the vaccine? Now, he wouldn't dare say, no one will dare say, remember when we read that Cato guy? I think over a year ago, when we read the guy who said, it seems like the vaccine is stronger than natural immunity. And then that guy even had to admit later how full of shit he was, because like, no one's even going to argue that anymore. But he goes, even your natural immunity really isn't protecting you. It's like, okay, well, what is? Okay, so nothing. So what? Okay, it's protecting you more than the vaccine would. Certainly more than getting a boost every 9 months would, right? So what are we talking about here? So what do you want to do? Do you want to not live like that? This is where you go. So what's the prescription after all of this? Is the prescription that we should just not live normal life forever? Okay, then just come out and say that. And let's see how many people are moved by that. Okay, now let's continue this quote from the doctor. That old saw about hybrid immunity, vax plus infection, providing immunity superpower, and thus no need to be careful, is no longer true. We're seeing such folks get reinfected within 1 to 2 months. So again, now they'll say, isn't this interesting? First, he'll say, you know, that natural immunity doesn't work. And then he'll say, by the way, the vax plus natural immunity also doesn't work. Like, what's the thing that's left out there? It's so funny, like, how blatant this is. Hey, you know, like, we have this vaccine that is the greatest thing ever. We need to mandate it. We need to ruin your life if you don't get it. We need to have the taxpayer subsidize it. And we need these, you know, it has to be provided under, like, emergency trial, you know, situations. We have this vaccine. And then you go like, well, does the vaccine work? You go, well, let me tell you, natural immunity doesn't work. And even the vaccine plus natural immunity doesn't work. You go, feels like you were leaving one thing out there. Why isn't there one line about just the vaccine? Oh, yeah. I guess if the vaccine plus natural immunity, which we've all granted is better than natural, we've all granted that natural immunity is better than the vaccine. So if the vaccine and natural immunity don't work, then you guess what, you know what really doesn't work is the vaccine. Okay. Can B4 and B5 make you sicker? Now here we're getting into finally, what is the question that matters, Rob? Can these new variants make you sicker? Okay. In an epidemiological update released last month, the World Health Organization noted that currently available evidence doesn't indicate a change in disease severity associated with either. However, the agency also said their growing prevalence has coincided with a rise in cases in several regions.
Cases.
With those increases leading to a surge in hospitalizations in some countries. So that's what you've got. That's when it gets right down to the important question, that's how fucking vague and beating around the bush they have to be. Well, some we have countries. No evidence, actually. No evidence. Well, in certain countries, hospitalizations have gone up. Because there's been like an increasing in cases, like, okay, so you, nothing. Here's basically.
Everyone give me all of your money and I'll start honest journalism. And here's what the article should be. We now have the newest variants of BA4 and BA5. Why are some countries seeing more hospitalizations than others? And then your next paragraph would be, here are your countries that have higher hospitalizations. And then right off the bat, is that a problem or not a problem? I'm going to guess it's not even that much of a problem. Here are all the countries that are not seeing higher hospitalizations. What are the differences between these two countries? Here are the experts explaining their latest theories.
Yep. Okay, let's go to the next paragraph. Yeah, absolutely. BA5, Topol said, led to a marked rise in hospitalizations in Portugal, where it rapidly became dominant, and is having similar effects in many European nations and Israel.
Well, Israel's the most vaccinated.
Yes, again. So in highly vaccinated countries, they go, yeah, hospitalizations have had a rise. They've had a rise in hospitalizations. Okay. But so again, what conclusion would you draw from that? That I guess being highly vaccinated has not at all deterred this. But let's continue. There have been reports that a wave fueled by BA4 and BA5 in South Africa was associated with somewhat lower death rates than the first Omicron waves, which were already reported as being having way lower death rates than previous variants. That's me saying that, not the article, by the way. But they say that, yes, the reports in South Africa was that they had somewhat lower death rates. And of course, as we know, this is what the Omicron variant, when it first arose, that it was first reported in South Africa. You know, yeah, there's it's not killing as many people. It's not as likely to kill you. Tweet all things, and everyone knows this just from personal experience, right? Like, compare the people you know who got Delta to the people you know who got Omicron. This is a lot of people know this. Okay, moving on. What about vaccines? One major question is whether the potential rollout of an Omicron-specific booster later this year will help combat the rise in BA4 and BA5. Given how much the variant has mutated in the last 7 months, there are concerns such an offering may be relatively outdated by the time it's available. In the meantime, it's funny that they even have to admit this, right? In the meantime, officials and experts alike say getting vaccinated and boosted when eligible continues to provide strong protection against the world health impacts of COVID-19. So they're going to sit there and say, it's like the whole article is like, look, man, natural immunity plus being boosted doesn't even work against this variant. That's how scary it is. But you know what? You got to get fucking boosted again. Even though I know we initially told you that if you got the vaccine, you couldn't get COVID or transmit COVID. I know that Fauci and Biden and all of these people told you that. And I know that we're now telling you that the scary thing about this boost, this variant, is that even if you're boosted, it seems to be no deterrent to that. But here's why you got to get boosted again, because all the experts who told you all that shit at the beginning are telling you that again. According to the latest available data from the California Department of Public Health, unvaccinated individuals were more than 5 times likely to get COVID-19 than their vaccinated and boosted counterparts. They were also 7.5 times more likely to be hospitalized and 14.5 times more likely to die from the disease. So that's where they'll go at the end of this, is that they're saying, still sticking to these numbers. It's not, if you remember, Rob, it's not what they said, what they used to say. 99% of the hospitalized are unvaccinated, you know, or these numbers they used to throw out there. They're now saying that the unvaccinated are just likely, you know, more likely, 7.5 times more likely to be hospitalized. The problem with those numbers is that many very, very sick people won't get either won't or their doctors won't allow them to get vaccinated. That's the real issue that they're having right there with that. So there are people in the very, because people get sick from the vaccine. And I'm not even saying like conspiracy theory shit. I'm saying like you get sick for a few days after you get the vaccine, right? That's pretty standard. A lot of people who are very, very old or very, very sick, their doctors will not recommend them get this vaccine because it's dangerous. And so they're counted as the unvaccinated. But they're also the people who end up being hospitalized or dying from COVID. So it's just very misleading when you put these numbers out like that. Anyway.
So I guess you got a bad product when the people that most need it can't take it. Doesn't well, that's sound right. like you got a working thing.
That's right. So this is basically where the article goes. And if you guys want to read, you can go read a little bit more about it. They recommend being vaccinated, wearing masks. And they never even mention masks throughout the whole article, but then they go, you got to wear a mask. So they're trying to push all the same old shit. Get vaccinated, wear your mask, all this stuff, get tested, blah, blah, blah. But it seems overwhelmingly obvious that the real story here is that the virus is becoming more contagious and what seems like less deadly. And that would not only make sense, it would not only be this is what I remember me and you talking about this when Omicron was this brand new thing in South Africa. And we were going, wait a minute, the reports on the ground are saying that this is going to be more contagious and less deadly. And that turned out to be completely right. And you know, about me and you have a pretty good track record of being completely right on this stuff. Okay, so I'm just saying what it seems like with these subvariants is that they're more contagious and less deadly. And that seems to be consistent with even what this article's saying, even though they're trying to push you in the direction of get vaccinated, get tested, get masked, all this shit. It's like, no, what's really going on here is that you're spinning this. You're spinning the fact that the newest variant is more contagious and less deadly to say, oh my God, it's more contagious. You can even get it if you've already had it. Okay. But again, it's Michael Malice's point. Truthful or factual, but not truthful. All right. That's going to be our episode for today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about on the next one. What do you got, Rob? I know you got something there. I see your face. What do you got?
No, let's get our plugs in. I got Whiskey Rebellion for Liberty this weekend in New Stan in PA. And then the following weekend, Summer Porch Tour out in outside in Nashville. My friend Andrew's got like a nice farm, put up a stage for us. That's like real outdoor, you know, porch tour vibes. And then Atlanta, we're in a small theater. And then you got Young Americans awesome. For Liberty.
Well, I got Freedom Fest coming up soon and Young Americans for Liberty Revolution 2022. So make sure you come out to that. Freedom Fest out in Vegas, Young Americans for Liberty in Orlando. And then we'll be setting up a bunch of stuff for the end of the year with me and Rob coming to a town near you. All right. Thank you guys for listening. Catch you next time. Peace.